Blood and Barrels discuss cases that contain graphic content.
And Mike has a potty mouth.
So does Amy.
Nah.
Listener discretion is advised. What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Blood and Barrels. I'm Mike.
I'm Amy.
And man, we're like this close to hitting 10,000, which is amazing.
We are. Hopefully by the time you hear this, we will have hit it.
That's like the first like really major milestone for a podcast is to hit 10,000 downloads. So I'm super excited about that.
We're super close. Super, super close.
Yeah, actually, by the time you hear this, we'll be...
We're hoping.
We should be at 10,000, or at least that day we'll probably hit it. So we want to say thank you to you guys. That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't think we'd ever hit it. I still sometimes get amazed that people like actually want to listen to us talk about shit, but you know, hey, we appreciate it. We love you all.
So. I think we're interesting.
I hope so. You know, I've always hoped so, but you never know. So, but yeah, that's exciting. So, but yeah, this week I think we're bringing it in locally, right?
We are. And we actually have a lot of good cases coming up. We've got our special first 100 episode.
Yeah. This is going to be kind of an interesting run. So we'll hit the 10,000. Then we'll hit our 100th official episode. Because like if we do three, like when we did Texas Killing Fields, it was the same episode number, but
Texas Killing Fields, or was it just the two-parters? I don't remember, but usually if we have a two-parter one,
I think for anything that we've done where there's multiple parts, we just keep the episode number the same. So technically we'll hit episode 100 before we actually hit the number 100. <Right. laughs> So we're going to try to do a special case for each one of those.
Yes. And the first one is already researched.
Yes, milestones. Oh, yeah, I do have to do a second. She's giving me a look.
He actually has two cases he needs to start researching.
I do. But hey, I just did one. I did last week's.
I know, which is why I'm worried.
Why? Because it took so long?
Because you just did one and now you have two. Usually you have a bigger space in between.
Well, you know, I played my game. I think I've gotten that out of my system. So I'll be less distracted there.
Fair enough.
I'll have a little extra time. So... So yes, I will do my research. We'll get that all set up. But yeah, we have a lot of exciting things, or at least we're excited about it.
Yeah. So. I've already got the next two cases after this one ready to go. We're going to try to record them today.
Yep. And we're doing another live episode in March. I think we talked about that a few times probably. Yep,
March 19th. And it's on the website. It's also on Emerald Republic's Facebook.
Yep. But we'll be back in Florida for the third time at Emerald Republic.
Or as Debbie said last week, you could put it in your calendar.
I never look at my calendar unless it's work stuff, but I wouldn't put like a personal like event that I was going to go to on my work calendar. So I don't know. But yeah, I never use my personal email or
Well, that wasn't directed calendar. At you. That was more for our listeners.
Oh, I know.
She was like, you could actually just put it in your calendar.
You could if you're in that area. Yeah. Or unless you want to drive to Florida, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we do it, so.
Although we're going to try to fly this time. The last two times. But
we are going to try to fly this time, so. But we're excited. We're really excited about it, and we're excited about the case we're about to tell you about, which, like Mike said, is really local.
Oh, yeah. So, like, we're in McKinney, Texas. Like, the next town over is Allen, then it's Plano, Richardson, Garland, Dallas, right?
Or is it Richardson, Dallas, off of 75.
Off of 75, yeah. So, like, if you go straight off the highway where, you know, it's just right in a row. So, everything that we're talking about happened along those, within those cities
And we know them very well. So, it took place in North Dallas, Plano, Richardson, and Frisco was the one we didn't mention, but it's not off of 75.
And I've lived in at least half of those places. Yeah. So.
Same. So today we're going to be talking about the Texas Elder murders.
Yep. But before we jump into that, we did, you know, and of course, because it's local, we were able to get a local alcohol.
We were.
And I was actually surprised. I had not heard of Lockwood Distilling Company prior to this, but we went into the Total Wine up here. And when we decided which one we wanted ahead of time, we were looking at their site. And we walked up and the little tag on it said it was like their number one selling cream liqueur in the store. So I was like, okay, this will be cool to try.
And it is Lockwood. Actually, Miss Joy told me about Lockwood. And it is in Richardson.
Perfect. Yeah, which is right within the, it's kind of in the middle of everything, honestly.
Yep.
So yeah, today we're going to be trying their bourbon cream liqueur. It's a 17% ABV and we're just going to sip it over some ice to start with.
And if I remember, I don't have the description pulled up. That was a nice little corky pop there. I don't have the description pulled up in front of me because I'm a slacker. But if I remember, it's got like Texas pecan, vanilla, and of course bourbon, and maybe some other stuff.
But all those things.
They say on the website you can like mix it in ice cream and make an adult milkshake.
I was, you know, it was funny. I thought that would be cool. But at the same time, I was sitting there yawning just nonstop before we started this episode. So I was like, maybe I'll put it in some coffee.
Yeah, I bet it would be. I actually had that same thought, too, that it would be really good in coffee.
That smells good.
Yes. Yes, it does. It smells really good. I can't wait to try it.
I love that. Yeah. Because the smell that like you could put that on a candle.
Oh, yeah.
That would make an awesome candle.
Well, let's see if it tastes as good as it smells. Man, he's already on it.
Oh, yeah. Cheers. Sorry. Damn, that's fucking really good. Holy shit.
I haven't even had a chance to try it yet.
It's a good thing it's a low ABV or I'd be fucked up because I'm going to drink that whole bottle. That's good.
Oh, that is very, very, very really good. Good job, Lockwood Distilling, man.
Yeah, that's damn good. Like, I could just drink that straight.
Yeah, but I can see how it would be good in ice cream or in coffee. Or even like if you have chocolate cake and put ice cream on top of it and then drizzle it like a syrup over the top.
All of the above. Holy shit. Yeah, I love that.
It's very, very good.
All right. Well, good job to them. Yeah, they had like a whiskey and a few other things. And
they have everything. They have like two different types of whiskeys. They have gin.
Sorry, I kicked the table.
They have vodka. They have flavored vodka. They have rum. They have flavored rum. And yes. And that's just what's available at the stores. Apparently, there's other stuff in the distillery that they haven't distributed out to stores yet.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, we picked this one because we thought it'd be something a little different.
Yeah.
But damn. Yeah. That's real good.
So we had discussed maybe actually going to the distillery instead of going to Total Wine, but then we were lazy. We may have to drive out to Richardson and see what else they got that's not available in the stores.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Awesome. All right, cool. Well, are we ready to jump into it?
I don't know. Are you?
Oh, my God. You always ask me that. Yes, I'm ready. In fact, I asked you if you were ready. Are you ready?
And I turned it back on you.
Yeah, you did.
I'm ready. I got the notes in front of me. Let's go.
All right.
Okay. So today we are going to talk about Billy Chimirmir.
Chimirmir.
Yes.
Butchered it, I'm sure.
Chimirmir.
I mean, that sounds right. I'm sure we're butchering it, but
well, I'm just going to go ahead and warn you that this case is kind of all over the place and it is still kind of ongoing, so I'm here to give you what I can give you.
Fair enough.
And I had never heard of Mr. Billy, had you?
No, I hadn't heard of any of this. Your mom actually brought this case to us, didn't she?
She did, and actually I take that back. I had heard of him and I'd seen him like when I was Googling, but I did not realize that he was from here. And I thought he was kind of like an angel of death. So sadly, I just kind of ignored the stories.
Yeah, right.
But then my mom brought the story and I was like, ooh, this sounds interesting.
And didn't she find the article in like an AARP magazine? She did,
yeah. And actually, if you Google it, it's that article is the first one that will pop up is the article from the AARP.
That's so funny. Because that's like the retirement type thing, right?
Yes, but these victims were all
right. Retired. But you wouldn't like, okay, so it makes sense in this case, but you wouldn't normally think you would catch an article like that in a magazine like that, you know?
So yeah, that's where a lot of the information is from. So anyway, like I said, Billy was a serial killer in the North Dallas area for at least 2 years. His victims were all elderly women, and their deaths were all initially believed to be from natural causes. Billy found his victims because he was a former healthcare worker and worked with older citizens, and obviously he tended to focus on females. They're weaker, whatever. Some people have speculated that even though we don't know a lot about Billy and he, you know, not everybody's heard his name, he's probably Texas's most prolific serial killer. They say he may be worse than Ted Bundy or John Wayne Gacy.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Because I think they've confirmed like 24, but because the deaths were initially ruled natural, it's believed that he probably had
way more
that we just don't know about.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So we were able to find out about Billy because of his last victim. Her name was Lou Ty Harris. She went by Kim, so I'm going to call her Kim from now on. She was killed on March 20th, 2018. And so she was 81 years old, but she was not in bad health. She was known to be a woman that always wanted to look her best. Like, she would even get all made up just to go to Walmart. She always had jewelry that perfectly matched all of her outfits. And like I said, she would do this when going to Walmart. And unfortunately, that is where Billy found her, was at Walmart.
Interesting. So she's not like in a nursing home or anything like that.
No.
She lived in a house by herself or with her husband, or I don't know.
These victims didn't live in nursing homes. They lived in like the retiree homes, you know, like the ones that may have a medical,
like assisted living facility, or
not assisted. They may have an assisted living section, but a lot of older couples decide that they...
I know what you're talking about. It's like the apartment. They're almost like apartment complexes, yeah.
It's called senior living, and there's a lot of places that cater towards the elderly couples that are still in good health, but, you know, don't want to have the responsibility of taking care of a house.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll have, like, a section that's for people who need some health care, but it's not like what you would think of as like an assisted living or a nursing home or anything like that.
Yeah. So I actually had a friend whose mom lived in one of these places, and she left and she could go do things. But like you said, I think they had like a nurse on site,
yeah,
just in case you ever needed any kind of medical attention. And yeah, it was basically apartments or like bungalow style apartments for older individuals. Yeah.
Most of these victims lived in that type of place.
Okay.
What we'll find out is none of them really were having health issues. They, despite their age, they all died unexpectedly. We'll put it that way.
Gotcha.
So we know quite a bit about Kim just because she was his last victim. She was a Vietnamese widower. So she had been married. She met her husband when she lived in Vietnam. She had actually run a restaurant in Vietnam right before Vietnam fell. And again, this is when she met her husband. The two fled in a helicopter and came to the United States.
Okay.
So I'm going to actually go ahead and correct myself. Kim was one of the few, if not only, victims that actually did still live in a home. The rest of them lived in those retirement homes, but she still lived in her house.
Oh, okay.
And sorry, I now hit the mic, much
you
like Mike did.
Well, I kicked the table. You beat up your microphone.
Sorry, microphone. So she had lived in Dallas on Warm Breeze Lane since 2003, which is a far north Dallas neighborhood close to Arapahoe.
Okay. I know the area.
Yeah,
I'm sure most of the people listening don't, but I know it. Yeah.
But so kind of close probably to the Dallas-Richardson border or Dallas-Plano, depending where it is. Kim had been described as being fun and lively. She liked to give out $2 bills to her family members to bring good luck. So she would often order $2 bills from the bank in bulk.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that was kind of cute. She was described as a hoot. Her son-in-law is the one who called her that. And he had actually lost his wife, obviously, her daughter, to cancer years before, but he stayed in touch with her.
That's good.
He actually said that while most people dread their in-laws, he got really lucky with her. Like, he just loved Kim. He loved her, and he loved his sense of humor. And he was the one that would actually later go into her home and confirm, or not go into her home, but confirm that jewelry that they found on Billy was Kim's. So he kind of helped get the case started.
Gotcha.
So on the day in question, like I said, Kim had gone to Walmart looking her best. She didn't notice Billy behind her. He was unassuming. He looked almost like a security guard. He was clean cut and nicely dressed. Not somebody you would even consider being afraid of. But because he was so unassuming, he was able to follow her out of the Walmart and then to her house. And the security footage in Walmart, their security cameras were actually working that day. They showed Billy getting into his gray sedan, which to me is kind of also unassuming, right? It's not like the VW Bug or the white van.
It certainly doesn't stand out, right?
Right.
Like, it's not a vehicle that you would notice. It's not like a, you know, red sports car that stands out. And you're like, man, that sports car has been back there forever, you know?
It's not like Matt's car. But they were able to see on the video that he was leaving the parking lot. But had they just like been reviewing their video just to review it, they wouldn't have thought anything suspicious of it.
Well, because he's just leaving the parking lot.
Right. So just a few hours later, the police were given some sort of tip. The details on the tip, I don't really have. But because of this tip, they went to Kim's home and they found her deceased. And at first, they thought she had died from natural causes. She was 81. It seemed to them that she had died in her sleep. Her front door was locked, and she seemed to be in like a peaceful state, and all of her husband's like model airplanes that were really expensive were still there and intact. So nothing really seemed out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
And I have a quote later, but sadly in situations like this, not a lot of investigation goes into it because they do think it's a natural death.
Yeah.
All right. Now that we fixed my microphone situation.
Sorry, we had to take a quick break there. We're having technical difficulties today.
The only odd thing was that they did eventually determine that there were some special things missing from the home. And I think this is when the son-in-law came into play. Like, the police wouldn't have known this just going in, right? Her precious $2 bills were gone. A gold necklace with a jade pendant that she was known to wear, like, frequently was gone. Some of her important papers that showed her life's journeys. I don't know, kind of maybe like a diary or something, which I find...
Why would somebody steal that?
Yeah, I don't know. I find it odd that that was stolen.
Yeah, but I get the money and I get the jewelry. Maybe that's like the trophy.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, obviously, I would assume the money's going to get spent and that the jewelry will get sold.
Right,
so
right.
Maybe that's the trophy item.
Could be. Know. Or he also stole her house keys. But I imagine that was to lock her door to make it look like natural causes.
Probably, yeah. Well, yeah, because if she's locked in her house then and there was no breaking and entering. Yeah, yeah.
It was confirmed later when they started investigating Billy that they found her keys in his car. They tested it and obviously it unlocked her front door.
That looks really bad.
Yeah, like what explanation do you have for having an old woman's house keys in your car?
Yeah, exactly.
Luckily, and I say luckily in quotes, in this case, the foul play was discovered. On the other underside of her pillow, police discovered lipstick matching Kim's specific lipstick that she had been wearing to Walmart that day. That's a little odd to find it on the underside of your pillow, right?
I mean, yes and no. So a couple things here. And this is me being a dude, but I mean, did she have like five different lipsticks and like maybe one for every day of the week? Like, and do women sleep in their lipstick? I'm assuming some do, some don't. Like, and then
you're not supposed to.
Okay, well, I don't know these things, but at the same time, like maybe you took a nap in the middle of the day.
But for it to be under your pillow?
Well, right. But at the same time, like I flip my pillow all the time. I move all the time. And so my pillow moves and then I have to throw it back up. And so I don't know that I have a top and bottom side to my pillow, you know?
I get what you're saying. And they didn't automatically assume foul play when they saw it. It was just enough for them to investigate more than they normally would have.
Sure. I mean, that makes sense.
So when they started investigating, obviously the medical examiner started looking harder at her body to determine if it really was natural causes. And he discovered that she had petechiae, which are red dots on your skin. And she had some other subtle signs. And these are signs that don't reflect a natural death, but reflect that you were probably
suffocated. Yeah.
So the medical examiner believed that with that information and the lipstick print on what they called the underside of her pillow, that she was probably smothered with her own pillow. And they immediately changed her death to a homicide and started investigating.
I know it's possible to suffocate somebody with a pillow, but it's a concept I don't understand. Like, I feel like I could breathe through it. Like, it's fabric. And I feel like as long as you don't panic and you take controlled breaths, you could probably survive it. I could be totally wrong, but that's how I feel.
But if you are right, think about it. If you're attacked by somebody you don't know, you're gonna panic. Your own pillow, you're going to panic.
Sure, so. Yeah. And then, of course, you're breathing faster than the actual air you're taking in. So, at that point,
more of the oxygen.
Now, I will say, I imagine probably what gets you is you're breathing out the carbon dioxide and there's not enough. It's probably the fabric's probably so tight that it traps it. And so you're breathing your own carbon dioxide and you stop getting oxygen. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So I retract my previous statement, but I've always wondered, you know,
sometimes you got to talk it out to work it out.
Yeah. I
mean, obviously it's a good weapon. People use it.
I knew it could happen, but you know, I always saw it in movies and I was like, I don't feel like that's realistic. I feel like I proved myself wrong, but yeah.
It does seem that there might be easier ways to kill somebody than that. Especially if you got somebody fighting back.
True. But
again, even though these women were in good health, they were still elderly and he's a younger man. So they probably couldn't fight back against him, you know.
Right.
Not
in the way that they would be able to escape kind of thing.
Right. Not talking shit about them. Just that.
Although I do wonder, like, you know, did he have scratch marks? Did they get any kind of like DNA from under the nails? Because even though she may not have been able to physically get away, if she scratched him or something like that, then at least she would have, you know.
So they didn't with her. They, if I remember correctly, they were able to figure out it was him in other ways. And with the other women, none of that was taken.
Right. Because they didn't. Right. Yeah.
Because they just assumed it was natural causes or old age. But with the discovery that Kim's death was a homicide, it didn't take Dallas and Collin County officials long to determine that she was probably not the first woman targeted for her possessions. And they began to believe that many elderly women had been targeted and that they had a serial killer on the loose in North Texas for at least 2 years prior to this murder.
You know what I just thought about?
What's that?
When he was arrested? Because we live in McKinney is the county seat.
Yeah.
And so, and we live, the county jail's what, 2-3 exits up.
Yeah.
So he may have been housed over there at least temporarily.
He was housed in Dallas.
Oh, he was housed in Dallas.
He has not actually been tried for any of the Collin County cases.
Gotcha. Okay.
Like I said, this is still.
I was just like, man, he might have been right there.
Well, he may end up being right there because last I saw, Collin County has not decided if they're going to
charge him. Yet. They'll probably wait to see if it's worth it if they get him on some of the murders in Dallas.
Okay, so yeah, we will get to that in a little bit.
Perfect. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So immediately, this investigation began to include Dallas, Plano, Richardson, and Frisco police. The Plano police chief at the time, he has since retired, his name was Greg Rushen, and he actually admitted that it was very easy to just assume that these elderly women had died of natural causes, and he's the one that admitted that they usually didn't do a heavy investigation into these deaths so that it would be very easy for somebody to target these victims and cover it up and the police not.
I feel like that's probably true across the board, though. I mean, everywhere, just because you, unless there's some sort of sign or something that's leading to foul play, when somebody's older and they die,
right?
Like, why would you just automatically investigate it?
Well, and they may now because of this, but
maybe. But I mean, can you think about, like, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, but I mean, you have to think about it, especially in Dallas and Plano. And I mean, there's a lot that goes on in this area because it's such a big area. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine how many more resources you would need.
They don't have the manpower or the money to.
Right. But I mean, that does. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that older people don't deserve the attention. Right. I just think maybe. But if there's maybe,
no sign that it could be foul play, why would you investigate it?
I wonder if maybe it needs to fall more heavily on the, like, the medical examiners. Maybe they need to do a more thorough examination. And I'm not saying they don't. I don't know. But I'm curious because, again, why would you investigate every death of an older person to see if it's a homicide? Right. You know what I mean?
No, I absolutely know what you mean. And that's, and again, that's not saying that anybody did anything wrong. There was no reason to think anything had happened in this situation.
Right.
They would have handled a young person's death probably the same way. If there's no sign of anything, they're going to label it as natural.
Why would you investigate it? Yeah.
So before I go deeper into this, I need you to refill me. Okay. It was great in coffee, y'all.
We took a break and made some coffee in it.
It was really great in coffee, but I think I just want some normal.
Okay, let me see your glass. Filler.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. I'm going to get myself some, too. All right.
So after Kim's death, the Dallas police alone.
Holy shit, there's only like half a bottle left.
That's how good it is, you guys.
I'm already halfway through the bottle.
So yeah, after Kim's death, the Dallas police alone decided to look into at least 750 deaths of elderly women that were initially.
750?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Classified as natural deaths. And I think there were some numbers that said eventually like upwards of 1,000 between all the areas were looked into.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
It actually didn't take long to identify Billy as a suspect. Billy had been found with Kim's jewelry, and it was determined that, like I said earlier, he had been employed in the home healthcare industry for years, which gave him the access to find his victims. His whole reason for killing was that he wanted the expensive jewelry to steal.
Okay, I kind of get that. I mean, not in a way that makes it okay, but just so I'm following. So they identified him by watching the Walmart security video, and where they were like, this might be the guy.
Yeah.
They checked him out. He had the keys and the jewelry. And okay. Right. All right. So
Looking into him, they eventually looked into his cell phone records, and by looking at those, were able to confirm that he had actually stalked some of his victims. So, case isn't looking good against him, right?
Like, the one thing I haven't figured out about modern-day criminals is why haven't they figured out that if they're going to do something criminal, leave your fucking cell phone at the house. Like, don't take it with you. Not trying to help any criminals, I'm just saying. True. Like, you'd think people would know this by now.
You would think, but now, when Billy was originally arrested, he was actually held on $11.6 million bond.
Wow.
They were not fucking around. Of course, all the while, he's claiming he's innocent. He still claims that he's innocent. Police believed that he would approach these retirement homes and pretend to be like a maintenance man to gain access.
Oh, because they're all like gated type communities. Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't actually work for any of the places that he stalked his victims at. But because he had worked in it previously, that's kind of where he got the idea.
Gotcha. Okay.
One of the homes that he stalked quite a bit was the Tradition Preston Assisted Living Center. They believe that he had 7 victims there in 6 months.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Some believe that Billy used the home's lack of security to his advantage to gain access to his victims. Like, obviously, they had gates, but because they could come and go as they please. The security's not like it would be at a nursing home or whatever.
Well, right? I mean, let's be honest. I don't know about these types of facilities or living areas, but I know like in an apartment, if you don't have the gate code, all you got to do is park off to the side, wait for somebody to enter, and just drive in behind them. Like, those gates are pointless.
Well, and half the time the gate's broken anyway.
Yeah, they are. I actually knew a guy who used to just bump the gate. He'd wait for it to open, and then he'd just nudge it with and just knock it off the tracks.
The first apartment I lived in Garland was like, that was their selling point. We are this brand new apartment complex. Like, I was the first person to live in that apartment. We have this great technology security gate. I lived there for a year and a half, I think. And I think 75% of the time the gate was just always open because it was broken.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned earlier that he was very unsuspecting. So at the time, nobody was really looking at him. Yeah, he's this maintenance man here to help me out. He didn't look scary. Billy's defense attorney claims that the evidence against Billy is all circumstantial and that the North Texas prosecutors have been overzealous in their hunt to link Billy to any unexplained death of an elderly woman in the area. I mean, I still think it's pretty sus that they found the jewelry and the keys and
well, like, okay.
What's the explanation for that?
I could see him saying that about some of the other ones, but, you know, that's not necessarily, I mean, I guess it could be circumstantial, but that sounds like physical evidence. Yeah. They caught him with the jewelry.
The keys to her house.
I mean, an argument could be made that, yes, he robbed her, but didn't kill her, and somebody
she
else
died
killed
of
her,
a heart attack or after he robbed her.
Something like that. But, yeah, I don't know.
So, in 2021, Billy was tried for his first murder. And when I say first murder, it's the first murder he was tried for. He was actually tried for Kim's murder. So, his last victim was the first one that he was tried for. The jury was hung. There was one juror that refused to change his vote. So I'm assuming he was saying that Billy was innocent, or she. I don't know if it was a male or a female. It didn't take them long to try Billy again. Only 5 months later, he was given a second trial. Same evidence. The new jury found him guilty of Kim's murder in 45 minutes.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a pretty quick deliberation.
Yeah. He was tried for another murder. So he has been convicted of two murders and has received two life sentences. So he was charged with a total of 22 murders initially. At the time of his second conviction, Billy was only 49 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, as a side note, Dallas County decided pretty early on that they weren't going to go after the death penalty in these cases. I don't know the reasoning behind that, but it doesn't matter. He received two life sentences without the possibility of parole, which ensured that Billy would never be released.
I have a feeling that juries probably want a little bit higher burden of proof in a death penalty case. And I think they know, I mean, maybe that's the point. Like, they have evidence, but they're like, if we push that, we may lose. And so it's better to get the conviction on life.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Speculating.
Well, and here's where it's going to get a little confusing. Because I'm going to tell you more about the victims, but this is where it's kind of all over the place because they were discovered at different times and things like that. So just try to follow me.
Gotcha.
So one of his victims was Martha Williams. Her daughter's name is Lindsay Rowan. And it's said that he'll probably never be tried for her murder just because Dallas isn't pursuing any more murders.
Well, they've already got him on two life sentences, so why waste the taxpayer money and keep trying him over and over again?
Right. And Collin County has yet, from what I've seen, to make a decision if they're going to try him for any of the victims in their jurisdiction. Because, again, he's already got two life sentences, so they're trying to determine if it's worth it or not. So, but Martha is most likely one of his victims, but her daughter will never have that confirmation because he's not going to trial.
Right.
Lindsay confirms that her family, as well as many other families, believe that Billy is responsible. So they believe that he killed Martha. She said at first she was disappointed that Dallas didn't go after the death penalty. But at the same time, she imagined him spending the rest of his life in prison and rotting in jail. And that kind of made her, for lack of a better word, feel better. But she does think that more needs to be done to provide closure and justice for her family and the other families who never saw their day in court. Which I get, because her point is he was indicted for a total of 24 murders, but is only being held accountable for two.
I mean, I do get that, but yeah. I will say at the end of the day, I think it gives the families closure, which I think is important, but tacking on, I mean, ultimately tacking on more life sentences won't add any, it's not going to affect him any differently.
No.
Right.
No.
Like, so it's about the closure for them. And so I get that point.
Yeah. But. Well, so Catherine Sinclair was another believed victim of Billy's, and her nephew disagrees. He thinks that the state made a big mistake by not pursuing the death penalty. He says, much like Martha's daughter, that the families are missing out on justice for their loved ones. And his argument is that the state is also wasting money by keeping him in prison.
So I get that argument as well. The one thing I will say is generally because of the appeals process, that they're going to waste all that money anyway. And by the time they do finally put him to death, he'll be in his, you know, 60s, 70s. Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know. I definitely see both sides, and I'm not saying either is right or wrong.
No, it's their opinion and it's their thought. And I do agree with both of them that the families who won't see their day in court still deserve some sort of justice.
Yeah.
Even if it's him, he never will, but even if it's just him admitting, yes, I did it, at least that would give them something. But he's still denying anything.
Right.
Now, I mentioned that he was convicted of two murders. The second woman he was convicted of killing was named Mary Ann Brooks. She was from Richardson, but that's also Dallas County, which is why Dallas County charged him. She was 87. She was also smothered to death. And this time it took the jury less than 30 minutes to find Billy guilty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He actually did have one survivor in March of 2018 that helped lead police to him. Her name was Mary Bartell. She did survive the attack by Billy, but she also knew Billy. And she told Billy about her attack and, I'm sorry, she told police about her attack and that she knew Billy was her attacker. She was one of the Plano victims. They began to investigate, and they were planning on using her in Billy's trial. But so she was 91 in 2018. She did die from natural causes in 2020 at 93. So she wasn't able to see Billy brought to justice. But through technology, she was able to actually testify at his trial. They had tape recorded her disposition back in 2018.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
So in that recording, she had described having a pillow thrown over her face and that her attacker put all of his weight into trying to keep her from being able to breathe. So I'm like I mentioned earlier, Dallas dropped the rest of their charges, and this was because he'd gotten that second life sentence. So Dallas dropped a total of 11 charges against him. And as of October of this year, like I mentioned earlier, Collin County prosecutors hadn't decided if they were going to move forward. But Billy has since been named in several civil suits, like wrongful death cases as well. Now, I'm going to give you just a little bit of information about Billy, and then we're going to talk about the victims because they're more important. So, mentioned earlier, he was a former healthcare worker. He was actually a native of Kenya that was living in the U.S. illegally. He had come to the U.S. in 2003 on a B2 tourist visa. So he was just supposed to be here visiting. Again, I mentioned earlier that Dallas County began looking into 750 deaths. They think he may have caused 1,000. Again, they don't. They don't.
That seems real high. So he got here in what year?
2003.
They caught him in 2018. I mean, he did get 7 in 6 months, but I don't know that the math really.
No, it's adds a lot. Up
there. You know what I mean? Like, there could be a lot. I mean, let's say on average there was a victim a month. You know,
it's still not 1,000.
It's still not 1,000, but there could be way more than the 22 or 24, right?
Exactly. And I think that's the point. The other thing is that Billy was also known to go by the fake name of Benjamin Quiddaba, and he had actually been charged, I believe, in 2016 of trespassing and giving police a false name. Now, this is he had trespassed into another assisted living home called the Edgemere. And he was caught and taken to jail. But he was not in for very long. It was trespassing and false identification. The deaths at the Tradition home that we talked about earlier began basically right after he was released.
So that was 2016?
I believe it was 2016.
And you said he was caught in 2019?
2018 is when he caught.
So, okay, so you at least know or have a pretty good idea that he's been doing it for at least 2 years, it sounds like. I mean,
they confirmed that it started in 2016.
Okay, so yeah, 2 year period. Yeah, I don't see 1,000 victims in 2 years.
No, but I think their point is that's as far back as they've looked. He's been here since 2003, so
the
first known victim is 2016.
Gotcha, okay.
And so now we're going to talk about some of the other possible victims. I mentioned Catherine Sinclair's nephew earlier. She died in April of 2016. And initially, like everyone else, her death was considered to be natural causes. She was 87. After a COVID delay, her death certificate was changed to undetermined from natural causes. Regardless of what the initial cause of death was, her family was always convinced that she had been murdered. From day one, they had found lipstick on her pillow, much like police had found lipstick on Kim's pillow. I don't know if they ever took it to the police. Just they saw that and they were convinced that she was murdered. They also went on to say that Catherine had a safe that she had kept in her home that was missing when she died. Oh, I take that back. They did file a police report. But it didn't really go anywhere. When Billy was arrested, Catherine's family called the police again. And her story was so close to Kim's story that then they began investigating.
I mean, the MO sounds similar, you know, with the lipstick under the pillow and...
Mm-hmm. And she was one of the ones that lived at the Edgemere where he was arrested. Like I said, he was actually working there under a false name. Or I'm sorry, he was, quote, working there under a false name. He claimed to be an employee, so the people saw him around there. He was pretending to be an employee, even though he was not.
Oh, so people would have recognized him.
Yeah, so they didn't.
Well, but I mean, if you find out later that he's not an employee, but everybody recognizes him because they see him there all the time, that's sus as hell, dude.
Well, you would think. And what's funny is by the time police realized that he wasn't an employee there, three of their residents had died. Now, again, at the time, it was listed as natural causes. Now, police believe he's responsible for their deaths. And one of them is Catherine Sinclair. Then there's Phyllis Payne and Phoebe Perry. We also have Joyce Abramowitz, who died in July of 2016. Only 3 months before she died, Joyce had actually gone to the police herself and reported that her room had been broken into and that her jewelry was stolen. Again, this is similar to what Billy does, right? Joyce had been on vacation when her jewelry was taken. So she's still well enough to go travel the world.
Well, but why would you break in, steal the jewelry, and then come back and murder later? I mean, I think that kind of shows that if that's the case and he is the one responsible, then I think that it shows that while the jewelry is part of the motive. Obviously, the killing is
part of it,
big part of it. Yeah. And so you can't say one more than the other. It sounds like they're kind of go hand in hand, right?
Yeah. Now, Leah Corkin, who was 83, also died in 2016, the summer of 2016. It was initially said that she died because of a stroke. Her daughter, named MJ Cummins, eventually came to accept this to be the cause of her mother's death, but she said it never sat quite right with her. It turns out she was right. Stroke was not a cause of her mother's death. They had actually gone to a movie the night before her mom died. Leah seemed to be perfectly healthy. MJ described her as her normal self and sassy. Again, it's discovered later that she was most likely smothered to death and it wasn't a stroke. Her body had been discovered on her living room floor, makeup smudges on her pillow, though. It was also discovered that Leah's wedding ring was missing from her room. She lived in the tradition Prestonwood home, so she was one of the seven victims there.
So, and again, I have to go back to the medical examiner thing. I mean, I wonder if, and again, I'm not trying to throw stones at anybody, but I'm curious if whenever an older person comes in, like, is it just kind of one of those things where if you can't figure it out without having to dig too deep into it, do you just label it as heart attack or natural causes or whatever? Like, because it seems in a lot of these that they're saying it was one thing, and then when they look a little harder, they're coming back and going, oh, wait, no, it wasn't.
Right.
So I wonder.
Yeah, and it's a good question. So another resident of the tradition Prestonwood was Glenna Day. And just a few days before Leah's death, she actually told her daughter that something wasn't right at the home. And she felt like she needed to move because all of her friends were dying.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She was 87. And not only did she feel like she needed to move, she actually went and made a checkup appointment to make sure that she was okay. Her doctor confirmed that she was. And she was known to be a really good artist. She was working on repairing one of her friend's paintings. She had recently gone out dancing. Shortly after Leah died, she became one of his victims, too. There was also Juanita Prudy, who was 82, smothered to death summer of 2016. Doris Gleason, 92, October 29th, 2016. We have Margaret White, who also lived at the tradition Prestonwood home. She died about a month after Joyce, who we talked about earlier, and her jewelry was also missing from her room. Carolyn McPhee was 82, found dead in Plano on New Year's Eve on 2017. Her husband had died only 8 months earlier from Parkinson's disease, and her family didn't initially suspect that she was one of Billy's victims until he had been arrested, and then they discovered that Billy had actually taken care of their father before he died.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's when they started suspecting him.
So in his actual, like, caretaker-type duties, not in his, like, I'm pretending thing.
Right. He had taken care of their father.
Gotcha. So he would have been in the home and would have known what kind of, had an idea of what they had or how she dressed with jewelry and stuff.
Right. Now, when they found Carolyn, they found blood, like, on her glasses and things. And so they thought that she had had a nosebleed, and that's why you had the blood on the glasses and I think on her pillow as well. But the nosebleed had been caused by an aneurysm, which was what killed her. And due to this, the family declined to have an autopsy performed.
Okay, that I actually kind of get.
Yeah, it makes sense.
If during the suffocation process she had an aneurysm blow, then the cause of death is, not that he's not responsible, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, but this was before they ever suspected him. The cause of death was thought to be an aneurysm. They didn't ask for an autopsy. They were one of the few that believed that she died of natural causes.
So they didn't actually confirm it was an aneurysm.
Right. That was just the belief. And it made sense to the family. So they said, we don't want to do the autopsy.
Gotcha. Okay.
It wasn't until Billy was arrested and they realized that that man had taken care of their father that they started thinking, well, maybe it wasn't an aneurysm.
So did they, like, have the body exhumed?
I don't believe they had the body exhumed, but they brought the information to the police's attention and realized that she did have jewelry missing. It was two diamond rings that she always wore.
So it seems highly likely, yeah. But no confirmed proof kind of thing. Gotcha.
But they were one of the few families that didn't question the natural cause. Right. Because it made sense.
Sure.
We also had Doris Wasserman, who was discovered December 24th, 2017. She had just celebrated the holidays with her family. Phyllis Payne was 91. She had been born in Fort Worth, but she didn't stay in Texas forever. She got married, and her daughter actually jokes that her parents moved every year. She said they lived in 20 different houses in 20 years.
Oh, wow.
She did eventually return to Texas, because we all know most people that are from Texas come back here.
That's what I hear.
The couple settled down in order to raise their children, and everyone who knew Phyllis knew she loved to be a mom and a grandmother. She was very involved in both of her children and grandchildren's lives. She was described as loving and supportive. Phyllis and her husband lived in the same home where they raised their children for 46 years. She was in her 80s when her husband died, and that's when she decided her house was too much for her to handle, so she moved into the Edgemere home in Richardson. And she described it as the place she wanted to live. She was excited about moving there. It was a place described where people who wanted to keep living would go. They just, you know, couldn't take care of a house.
Yeah, I mean, because it's essentially like a little apartment for you in a community with people kind of your own age who want to still be active. It makes sense.
Well, and this badass woman, remember she was 91 when she died? She was still driving at 91. Yeah. And just like you were saying, her apartment had its own kitchen. At 91, she still made her own breakfast. She read the paper, and she even volunteered at the home. She was not a sick woman. She was driving, volunteering, and cooking at 91.
No, I think that's awesome. It's great when you can, you know, keep going like that.
I love it. So apparently in 2017, after a year-long gap of these murders, Billy moved on to another assisted whatever living home in Frisco. A resident would later report a well-dressed man that claimed he was a maintenance worker. He actually approached her and asked if she needed work. She told him no, and he attacked her, knocking her out of her wheelchair. She started screaming, and he immediately tried to muffle her screams. Somehow, she survived and was able to pick him out of a photo lineup.
And this was who?
We don't have a name. It was just another resident that was approached by him.
So he had a couple survivors.
Yeah.
Because the other one was Mary Bartell.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. This wasn't the only time Billy used repairs as a reason to be at this home. He had been seen on the property multiple times, and multiple times he had been escorted off the property. So Frisco was a little bit more on their game. They at least escorted him off the property. Sometimes he would claim that he was inspecting the pipes on the property, though.
At some point, you'd think they'd just start calling the police every time they saw him show up.
You would think so.
Like, get his ass arrested. Like,
you would think so.
Because at some point, you know, you're trespassing over and over and over again. Like, you can get the police involved.
Yeah,
they should have.
Absolutely. Now, this is, for lack of a better word, my favorite part of this case. Some of the victim's family members came together and formed a nonprofit charity group that they called a Secure Our Seniors Safety. It's actually headquartered in Addison.
SOSS?
Yeah.
or SOS?
Yeah. Secure Our Seniors Safety. Yep. The group aims to assist seniors and protect them against these types of crimes. And the group also helped pass a law that required that MEs to notify a deceased person if their family's autopsy report had changed. And it also required for like spot checking for stolen jewelry at local like gold places, you know, cash for gold places.
Well, but I mean, I think that's awesome, but I mean, you have to know something's missing first, right?
Right. So I was able to actually go onto the Secure Our Senior Safety website, and it's kind of cool. They have, the stories listed of, again, not all of the victims, because not all of the families joined in on this, but their family members kind of wrote a little story about them. So to end it, I wanted to do that because I think it's, they need to be heard more than Billy does.
I agree. And it's always nice whenever something tragic happens that something good happens and comes out of it after the fact, right?
Absolutely. So one of the families that was involved in this group was the Corcoran family. We talked about Leah a little bit before. She was 83 when she was killed. She was born in Illinois in 1933. She married a man named John, and the two of them loved to travel. Some of the many places that they visited were Mexico, Brazil, and London. And then what I found funny was one of the other places they put in there was like Sun City, Florida. So I think they just really liked Florida. But Leah was known to love her family and golf. She had six grandchildren. Her husband, John, died in 2009. And shortly after that is when Leah decided to relocate to Dallas. She had a daughter living here. Her daughter would describe Leah as the glue of her family and still remembers her laugh. So I thought that's kind of cool. Her death certificate was finally changed in 2019 to reflect that she was a victim of homicide. So they've got a little bit of justice there. I mentioned Juanita Prudy earlier. She was 82. She was also born in 1933, but she was born in Dallas. She graduated high school from North Dallas High School. After World War II, she married a soldier, and they went on to have three children. She actually taught dance in downtown Dallas. Her children remember that she was the popular mom. All of their friends were always hanging out at their house. Once her kids started high school, Juanita started working as a secretary. Unfortunately, her first husband did die in 1984 of lung cancer. She did eventually remarry a man named Roy Einspainer, who was also a widow. He had seven children.
Damn.
So between the two of them, they had 10 children. And Juanita's family remembers that this made holiday celebrations a really big celebration.
I can imagine, because you got to think how many of those had grandkids, you know, had kids of their own, and then, yeah.
Well, and I think they were still younger then. I don't think the grandkids were around just yet. I don't know that for sure.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. She and Roy were married for 12 years, but again, Roy would pass away, making Juanita a widow once again. But after just a few years, she was introduced to Jim Purdy. The two began spending time together because now they're older. They called it their golden years. And initially, it was just because they needed friendship. But eventually, they did fall in love, and Juanita sold her house to move in with Jim. They got married, but decided not too long after that the house was too much upkeep for them, so they moved into the senior living home. They were actually the first couple to sign a contract with the Traditions Preston home. So they were like the original residents.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Once moving in, Juanita became known as the party girl on the fourth floor. Everyone who knew her knew that she enjoyed life and intended to live it to the fullest, no matter how old she was. Most of her family lived out of state, and when she died, they were told she died peacefully in her sleep. Which was odd because she was in pristine health, like one of these very unexpected deaths. Her family is still waiting for her death certificate to be updated. We talked about Mary Brooks earlier. She was 88. She was one of the survivors. Her family's not part of this group. Same, Minnie Campbell. I don't have any information on her, but she was possibly a victim. She was 84. Again, her family did not participate in this group. We have Ann Conklin, who was 82. She was born in 1935 in Hollywood, California. And even though she was born in Cali, she spent most of her childhood in New Jersey. She had two sisters, Sue and Mary Jo, and I think they actually passed away before she did. So she was like the last living sibling. Anne had attended Pembroke College, which is now Brown University. So she was pretty smart. But she would actually go on to graduate college from the University of Michigan. And she did begin medical school there, but she only attended 1 year because she met her husband and the two got married before she finished school. They had 4 children together. They did end up getting divorced, but the two remained friends for the rest of their life. And their kids said they had a mutual respect for each other. Anne would actually go on to earn her master's degree in business administration. She dabbled in real estate and also taught 7th grade. At one point, she was even a paralegal. So she...
doing a little bit of everything. Yeah.
She was trying to find what she loved, I think. She did eventually move to South Carolina, where she met her second husband, Warren, and the two stayed together until he passed away in 2006. She considered him to be like her life's joy. Now, Anne also loved to travel, and she had been to every continent, even Antarctica.
Oh, wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. She became a big advocate for breast cancer research. I believe her daughter may have had breast cancer. But she worked here in the North Dallas area for breast cancer research. And you can actually still make donations in her name at the Frisco location of the National Breast Cancer Foundation, if that's something you want to do. She loved to garden, but she also liked all the little critters that she found in her garden. So she seems like a...
You and her would get along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, aside from the critters, I'm not... Unless they're roly polies.
You like the birds and the squirrels and...
True, but I don't like the spiders.
True. Yeah, okay.
Now, Rosemary Curtis is another possible victim. She was 75. I don't have information on her. Norma French, 85, was born in 1931. She was a native Texan, and she was born in Galveston. People tend to remember the sparkle in her eyes. She graduated from Ball High School and went on to attend college at UT. She joined the Kappa Alpha Theta sorority and majored in education. She would go on to teach school, but eventually determined that her main calling was to be a homemaker and wife. She also loved to travel, but she also loved to keep up with University of Texas sports. And like her son remembers that he never missed a chance to sit down and watch whatever sport with her.
Hook 'em horns.
Yeah. You know, I was about to say, you know those UT people. They're...
Oh, yeah.
They're hardcore. Yep. Yeah. She also enjoyed gardening, but her favorite thing to do was support her family. She had a lot of grandchildren. I tried to count them. It was confusing, but they called her Nornor.
Nornor.
Yeah, because her name was Norma, so her grandchildren called her Nornor.
That's kind of funny, actually. Yeah.
In 2019, Norma's death certificate was also changed to show that she was a victim of homicide due to being smothered. Doris Gleason was 92. She was one of the oldest victims. She was born in 1924 in Dallas. She married Jerry Gleason in 1954. They were married for 61 years. He died in 2015. He worked in the oil industry, and after he retired, they also decided to travel. They went many places, but Doris's lifelong dream was to go to Alaska. And I don't think she got to go with her husband, but she did get to cruise Alaska shortly before she died. She and Jerry were both described as being people you really should know and salt of the earth. Doris was also fascinated by genealogy. And she would spend a lot of her free time trying to study her family tree. Her death certificate was also updated in 2019. Homicide by smothering. We already talked about Kim Harris. She was the one that got Billy caught. And we talked about Carolyn McPhee above as well. Miriam Nelson's family is also involved in this group. She was 81. And she was from Granbury, but she died in Plano in 2018. She was a mom and a grandmother. She was also a great-grandmother. So take that back. She was actually born in Waco, but her family moved to Granbury. She graduated from Waco High School and went on to attend Decatur Baptist College. She was known to be really musically gifted. She could play the piano by ear. She grew up playing the piano and singing in her father's church. She still loved music as an adult, and she also liked to play bridge and cook. She was described as the epitome of a social butterfly. She was an Aggie fan. She loved Aggie football.
Man, we got some rivals. Yeah. Rivals over here, yeah.
Her son described her as the loudest cheerleader in the room. Like, she was louder than anybody. She reminds me of a couple of people.
Your mom.
Yeah, my mom for sure, yeah. Her death certificate has not been updated, but Collin County did indict Billy for her murder in 2019. So he's at least been indicted. Phyllis Payne, 91, was born in Fort Worth. She went to TCU. Shortly after college, she married Lawrence Payne, who worked in the oil industry as well, which caused them to move from state to state. They were married for 66 years, and they decided to settle down in Dallas to raise their family. Phyllis actually owned her own interior design company that she named after herself, which I think is super cute.
Get it, Phyllis.
They attended University Park Methodist Church, which I've actually been in, so, you know, it's always cool to know the places in my head, whatever. She was also part of a dance club.
A dance club?
Yeah, a woman liked to dance. She would have been good friends with the partier of the fourth floor, I think.
Hey, there you go.
She loved to travel, play cards, and garden. She died in 2016, and in 2018, her death certificate was also updated to homicidal violence. I mentioned Phoebe Perry, 94. Her family's not a part of this. Martha Williams, I talked about earlier, but her family kind of is involved in this group too. She was born in 1937, grew up in Texas. She attended SMU, so she would have been rivals with the TCU girl.
SMU.
In 1958, she married her husband, Frank. They were married for 42 years before Frank would pass away. I thought this was kind of cute. They actually met on a blind date.
Never done a blind date.
Me neither, but I thought it was kind of cute that they met on a blind date. They did live all over Texas, including San Antonio, Houston, and Arlington. But after Frank died, Martha moved to Plano to be closer to her remaining family. She at one point taught science, and she loved art and design, which would eventually take over her career. And I mentioned earlier, right before she died, she was repairing somebody's painting.
Oh, yeah.
She really loved art. She was also a sorority girl. She was a member of Delta Delta Delta. And she would go on to...
Are those the Tri-Delts?
Tri-Delt, yeah. She would go on to work with them as an alumni, and she was even their housing director for a while. In 2018, her death certificate was changed from pending investigation to homicidal violence. And for some reason, they were able to confirm that Martha did put up a fight on the night she was murdered.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, I don't know how they confirmed, but they were able to confirm that. We talked about Joyce and Glenna. Another victim was Solomon Spring, who was 89. I also mentioned Doris Wasserman and Margaret White earlier. The next one we're going to talk about is Diane Delahunty, who was 79. Her family is also a big part of this group. She was born in 1938 in San Francisco. She was a third-generation San Franciscan and was proud to be one. Her father actually worked for RCA, and the family was eventually moved to Korea because he was transferred there for his job. Eventually, he was transferred back to California, and the family moved to Pleasant Hill, which is close to San Francisco. This is where Diane graduated from high school. She was actually then accepted into Colorado State University, but shortly after that, her father was transferred again, this time to Japan. So she went with her family with the intention to just spend the summer there and then go back to the States to attend college. But she met her husband, Paul Delahunty, in Japan, And obviously they fell in love. And instead of attending CSU, Diane spent 30 years in Southeast Asia.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And 6 in the Middle East working with the USO. The couple did have 4 children and eventually moved back to California. They would go overseas again for a little bit and then move back to the United States again, this time to Dallas in 1995. This was because their first grandchild was being born.
I was going to ask, because I was sitting there going, okay, you kind of traveled the world and lived in some really cool places, and then you were like, oh, let's go to Dallas.
Well, you know what's funny is I don't think their family lived in Dallas. I think they were still in California. They just didn't want to be overseas, and for whatever reason, they picked Dallas.
I mean, maybe it's just because I'm from here, but I'm like, that's an odd choice. You know, like, of all the places I could pick, Dallas wouldn't be at the top. You know what I mean? Not that I don't love Dallas and Texas.
I was about to say, he says that, but every time we leave the state, he longs to come back.
I do love Texas. I do.
Sadly, she died in 2017, and in October of 2018, she would have become a great-grandmother for the first time.
Oh.
Yeah, so she just missed it. Another victim was Mamie Maya, who was 93. Not a lot of information about her. We talked about Catherine Sinclair earlier, and the last family that's involved in this group is the family of Marilyn Bixler, who was 91. She was actually born in Ohio and was an only child. She did have a really close relationship with her mother, but her mother died when Marilyn was only 16. She also loved to sing, and it's pretty well known that she had a pretty amazing voice. And she actually met her husband, Chuck, through their voice teacher.
Chuck.
She went to Westminster College in Pennsylvania and studied music. She married Chuck shortly after graduating college, and they were married for 62 years and had 5 kids together. Chuck died in 2010. Marilyn started out as a stay-at-home mom. That was her career for 17 years, but she did go to secretarial school and went back to work. She eventually passed some sort of security exam and began working at Bank of America, where she worked as an investment officer, and she described it as the thrill of her career. So she loved doing that. In 2015, she did move back to Texas, which she had adopted as her home state. She didn't consider herself an Ohioan. She considered herself a Texan, which, good for her. She had 9 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. She had lots of hobbies, and some of them included she was the welcome ambassador at the Parkview in Frisco, which is the home. So even though she lived there, she was like the one that welcomed new residents in. And
so she was like actively involved. Yeah. And yeah, no, that's awesome.
She also liked to play bridge and read. She loved dogs. She had 2 named Cody and Carly. And she actually spent her 90th birthday celebrating in Cabo.
Hells yeah.
So, yeah, she died at 91, but she was partying in Cabo at 90.
She was living the life.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah. Initially, her death certificate did state that she died of natural causes, but in 2018, it was changed to undetermined. Now, the one thing that I find sad is that there was a Jane Doe victim in this case. All we know about her is that she was 81, and she was likely one of Billy's victims, but there's no family to claim who she was.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I love that there's so much on the victims, and that's really all I have because the case is still ongoing, and it covered such a large area of North Texas. It's hard to put it all in one episode. There actually is a podcast completely dedicated just to this case. So if you want more details, I haven't listened to it. I don't know the name of it, but you can find it and go listen to it. And it will go way more into depth than I did.
Yeah.
But
no, it's interesting, though.
Well, and the fact that it was right here by us and we never heard of it.
Well, and what kind of douchebags attacks an old lady in a fucking wheelchair and knocks her out?
Right?
Like, I mean, what the hell, dude?
Fucking rude as shit.
So fuck this guy. But yeah, I mean, I definitely like the fact that that we had some of the victim information. Like, I like cases where we can actually, like, tell some of their stories.
Yeah, so and these were good. Really, really kind of overviews. I'm sure in the podcast he probably goes into a lot more, but I just felt like they needed to be known, and I think we should have one more drink. Finish the bottle off.
Damn near finish the bottle. Holy crap. Well, yeah. Well, thank you for doing the case again. Like we talked about a little bit earlier, I got a couple coming up, so stay tuned for those. Not that, you know, like I don't think Amy probably does a better job, honestly. But but yeah, it's always, you know, interesting when we switch it up. So I got some coming, and then we got our 100th episode twice.
That's next.
Ours our next episode?
Yeah.
Damn, I haven't been keeping up. So
yep. Our first 100th episode will be the next one, and it will either be a bonus or the next Tuesday.
Yep. And then I think we're talking about doing two episodes coming out onto Patreon together. So yep. That's coming out probably within the next week or two.
So we're going to try to record our 100th
today.
And then we're trying to record one more today. So we'll either record that one today or tomorrow. And then tomorrow or the next day, we'll record the two Patreon. So
yep. So we got some Patreon content coming out. Of course, the merch shop is up. So, but that being said, we want to thank you all for joining us yet again. You know, we love y'all.
I wish you could try this whiskey cream.
It's really good.
You should travel to Texas just for it.
Like, we've almost drank the whole bottle. It's almost gone. Thank God it's a low ABV or we'd be schwasted.
It's really good, y'all. Like, if you decide to travel to Richardson to visit Lockwood Distilling, hit us up.
Well, if you live in the area, you can just pick it up at the liquor store. But
well, yeah. I mean, but some of you that live in the area, we love you. We've met you. If you decide to come out of the area, hit us up. We'd love to meet you.
True that. With that being said, we will catch you next time.
We love you all.
Laters. Thank you for joining us here at Blood and Barrels. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Blood and Barrels. You can also follow us on Twitter at Blood Barrels Pod.
Follow us on all the things.
You can also listen to Blood and Barrels on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or most anywhere where you enjoy your podcast.
If you enjoy listening, please head over to Apple Podcasts and rate, review, and subscribe. For more information about the show, you can check us out at bloodandbarrels.com.
If you want to help support the show and become a part of the Blood and Barrels family, you can join us on Patreon and get access to additional content. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.